Hey, good morning, everyone. So today is the 28th, right, of September 2018. And this is Nakis Bible Study. Today we're going to study Numbers 26, verse 53 to chapter 27, verse 14. And we have the prophets part in Isaiah 57, verse 13. So I try to give a little bit background of what we are up to in this portion. In the beginning of number 26, it is the second counting of the Israelites, right? And before that, we have the event of Peor. They have the idolatry and adultery of the Israelites with some Midianite women, and then they have worshipped the kind of Baal-Peor, and then no one stopped the situation, and somehow God is so angry and sent a plague to kill many people, and finally Pinchas, he is the son of Eleazar, a priest. He stand up and to kill one of the son of a leader. His name is called Zimri, from the tribe of Shimon, Shimeon. And because of that, God's anger stopped it. And then they start do the counting. And this is the beginning of chapter 26. And now we are at verse 53, right? So can someone read for me, like, from 53 to 56, please?
Starting at 52 or 53?
53.
To these, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, to these the land shall be divided as an inheritance according to the number of names.
Oh, yes, right.
To a large tribe you shall give a larger inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a smaller inheritance. Each shall be given its inheritance according to those who were numbered of them. But the land shall be divided by lot. They shall inherit according to the names of the tribes of their fathers, according to the lot of their inheritance. According to the lot, their inheritance shall be divided between the larger and the smaller.
Okay, great, thank you. So in these four verses, he's talking about something about inheritance, how to process the land in the Canaan. And among these four words, which word is so prominent, do you think?
Inheritance, inheritance, inheritance.
Exactly, yeah, inheritance. Just in these four words, it appears like six times, right? Six times, inheritance. And the Hebrew of this is nahala. And this verse in the Hebrew Bible, it occurs like a 222, to be precise. And just in this portion we are reading today from Numbers 26 and 53 to 27, verse 14, this word repeat occurred like 39 times in these 28 verses. So it is more than one word, one occurrence in each verse. You see how important this is? So this is something we need to pay attention. This is one of the key themes in this passage. Okay. And if you remember last week, who was here? Who was here last week? Oh, not many. And I think last week Sharon, she has shared about the census, the second counting, and to show all the tribes and the numbers, because I received your email, Gemma, thank you for that. You have shown all the tribes and all the numbers for each one. And there is a change of the numbers for each one, right? Some getting larger and some getting smaller, right? So, let me see. Yep. So,
do you guys remember which tribe decreased the most? Dropped the most?
Judah.
Decreased the most.
Decreased. I'm sorry. Shimon.
Right.
traceable. You can, yeah.
This is Simeon, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the number is like.
And it become
okay. Like how many? Two.
I think it's 59,000.
Oh yeah, but sorry, too much.
So this is a big drop. In terms of percentage, it is like 63%. Okay, so this is
something wrong with this tribe. And in the previous parashas, I think Gary or maybe Sharon has mentioned about the problem of this because of one of the men called Zimri. She belongs to this tribe, and she, even when Moses and all the leaders, they are weeping in front of the tents, and he bring a Midianite lady to have adultery. So this somehow reflects how bad this tribe was. Okay, and in terms of increment, which tribe has the biggest jump? Do you know? I mean, this is the first time in the earlier chapters of maybe one or two, chapter one or chapter two of Numbers. But this is 26, right? This is 26. Okay. So in terms of increment, which tribe has the biggest increment? Do you think?
Judah
is the biggest group, yeah. But in terms of increment...
Oh, Manasseh, I think.
Right, you got it.
That's not cheating if you go back and look.
What is the number? It's like...
Manasseh goes from 32,200 to 52,700.
Thank you. So this is actually almost like 63% gain in terms of number.
A big jump. So if we can account for the drop of semen because they are doing bad, one of the leaders' son commit adultery and which revealed or reflected in these numbers, so there must be something good in Manasseh, right? So what is this? If we go to a little bit earlier, I think. It is in the genealogy of Manasseh, right? Let me see. Okay. Should be in the middle. Let me see. 26. Yep. The counting of Manasseh starts from chapter 26, verse 29. And then, just like a normal family tree showing all the names, you know. But here, something that comes up, which should draw our attention, is on verse 33. Can someone read for me?
Now, Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, had no sons, but daughters. And the names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah. And Teresa.
Oh, thank you.
These are the families of Manasseh.
Yep, thank you. And you see here, like, usually in a genealogy, it's usually the names of only
men.
But here, it somehow mentioned the daughters of Zelophehad. And in fact, he has no son. So this gives us a little bit idea, something happening in this tribe, and this name are record, there must be a reason. And in fact, when we go look, when we read further into today's portion, we will see this daughter's name again. Okay, so
just one other thing about Shimon, mm-hmm. I suddenly occurred to me,
yeah.
And I think Sharon mentioned it last week. Remember that weren't Shimon and Levi really the two bad guys who went off and did shocking things after the rape of
Dina?
Who was it?
Dina.
And they slaughtered people unwisely, let's put it that way. And that's part of the the judgment. So when later on, one of them has an affair with the, has sex with the, with the Midianite woman, you know, you get a double curse on yourself, really.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Right, right.
Say a double consequence.
Or a double consequence. Okay, like, or a double judgment.
And actually, we will look at the tribe of Levites later.
That's another kind of thing.
So somehow we got some idea about this tribe, and okay, let's move on. Verse 57 to 65. So continue. Can someone continue?
Those counted among the Levi by their families were of Gershon, the family of the Gershonim, of Kahat, the family of the Kahati, and of Merari, the family of the Merari. These are the families of Levi, the family of the Livni, the family of the Hebroni, the family of the Matthew, the family of the Mushi, and the family of the Kohi. Kahat was the father of Amram. The name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt, and she bore to Amram Aharon, Moshe, and their sister Miriam. To Aharon were born Nadab, Avihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. But Nadab and Avihu died when they offered unauthorized fire before Adonai. Those males, 1 month old or more, counted of the Levi, were 23,000. These were not included in the census of the people of Israel, because no land for inheritance was given to them among the people of Israel. These are the ones counted by Moshe and Eleazar and Aaron, who took a census of the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho. But there was not a man among them who had also been included in the census of Moshe and Aharon the Kohen, when they enumerated the people of Israel in the Sinai Desert. Because Adonai had said of them, they will surely die in the desert. So there was not left even one of them, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Jehoshua, the son of Nun.
Oh, thank you. And in here we see the counting of Levites, the tribe, which is quite similar to the beginning of the book of Numbers, that we start with the counting of the 12 tribes, and then in chapter 3, there is a counting of the Levites. And so we now know that counting has a purpose, or maybe has purposes. There are several reasons. Can anyone name a few, like a one or two purpose for the counting?
Army,
very good. Yep. And actually, in our context, in the end of chapter 25, the Lord asked Moses to kind of doing like a revenge to strike the Midianites. So there is a background like that. They need to prepare to fight, to go against this kind of idolatry. And very good. And also, what else besides fight? Yep, just what we have read, like the numbers really important because it affects the size. Previously, what we read is about by lotting and the size, the tribe size, to define how much land, the territory that the tribe can inherit. So that is also one of the purpose, very important. And what else?
What always strikes me is that this concept of family, it's the family that gets counted, this family and that family and so on, or we can call it tribes, I suppose, in our language. So there's a sort of sense, it's not just count everybody, you know what I mean? It's very specific, this family and that family and so on.
Right, right.
I don't know if that's one of your...
Well, in the beginning of the book, it's about where they camped and who was in charge of what aspect of the tabernacle, carrying things, or
right,
setting it up?
Well, there are several reasons for the counting, for fight, for inheriting the land, and to doing something for the tabernacle, like the Levites, they serve the Lord. So the counting is different. They count from Asia just 1 month. And for those who need to go to the battle, it's from 20, right?
Yeah.
So hang on, you went too fast for me there. So the counting, who gets counted from birth?
Levites.
Oh, Levites from birth and everybody else from 20.
Right, right. So we can at least think of several reasons for the counting, for fight, for inheritance of the land, and also for serving in the tabernacle. And actually, if you remember, like they have a kind of a wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, the previous generation have gone, basically, besides two persons. Right, Caleb and Joshua. So, the counting is kind of like recognizing the new generation, right? Because we can imagine God should know how many people there are, right? So the counting is for the people. They are being included in God's plan, in God's kingdom, in God's in God's kingdom to have a part, have a portion to contribute. So these are the new generation, and actually this counting start after the plague. So this also excluded some of those second generation, but also seen in the event of Peor. So this kind of new generation, we can imagine they're someone who is similar to Caleb and Joshua. In some way, they do not rebel against the law. Okay. Otherwise, they should have died. They should have died in the plague of Peor. Okay. And also, when we try to think about the numbers thing, Levites. The number now is like 2300, I think. Is 23,000?
23,000.
Yeah. This one, okay. And in chapter 1 or 2, sorry, it should be chapter 3, right? So we can see 1,000 increment, just a little bit, for this tribe. So how would you account for this?
Well, there was Nadav's. Sorry, there was Datan and Aviram,
uh-huh.
And the rebellion in previous chapters in Numbers,
right,
where they had gathered people against Moses, and so the ground swallowed them, and the fire came out.
Yeah.
So that could have included, not everyone was Levites there, but that would include maybe some Levites.
Yep.
So what you're saying is that the percentage of Levites that...
The
increase is relatively small because...
Ah, you're right. It is more of an increase.
It is an increase.
Yeah. Just a few percent.
But it's relatively small because of the sins of,
maybe,
of these guys.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the other ones that have a great increase. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know Levites are called to have a stricter... They have stricter judgment.
Yeah.
You know, The rules are stricter.
Right, right. And if we look at I would suggest if we look at the context of chapter 6, before it is chapter 25, which is about the event of Pinchas, and which tribe does Pinchas belong to?
Levites,
because his father is a priest. A priest means under the trees of Aaron. So we can. Basically, we can think that this is positive, right? So this should be positive, a little bit in increment. I don't know how many percentage, if someone can calculate for me, but this is positive. But this is not a big jump. Maybe we can also see that someone in the Levites, they are not doing good. And probably, I would suggest is Moses and Eleazar, because they are just weeping. God asked them to kill all the leaders of Israelites in that idolatry. But it seems like this is not happening, maybe not happening because it is not recorded in the text, but at that moment it is Pinchas to do the killing of Zimri that stopped God's anger. So you can see that within the tribes of Levi, something good and something bad kind of. So maybe because of that we can see a little bit increment of this tribe.
Like a 1%.
One? Just one? I don't know.
Five. Exaggerating a bit.
Sorry.
What was Judas? Do you remember?
Judah is the biggest tribe. And
right, in terms of the increment.
In terms of the increment, I have a number here. It's 1,900 increment. So it's like 2.5%.
Yeah.
Judah goes from 44,600 to 76,500.
Oh,
that's a hell of a lot.
It's 7,400 to
76.
44?
Oh, no, 7. I thought he was one of the ones that increased.
It should be 74,000 and 600 in the beginning. I mean, in chapter 1, verse 26.
So I wrote it wrong, you mean?
Probably, yeah. It should be 74,600 and become Judas. 74,600 to become like 76,500.
Yeah,
that's quite serious.
Yes, so there's a little bit increment.
But very little compared to the size.
Yeah. Right, it's like 2.5%. So it's basically almost the same, like
even less than Levites.
Yeah.
Percentage.
Right. But
what percentage did you say? About
2.5. So I will not focus much on Judah, but like focus on Manasseh because of its big increment.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of what we have read, at the end of chapter 26, it mentioned about Caleb and Joshua again. It's somehow like deliberately put his name here, introduced their fathers, okay? So what is special about them?
Caleb and Joshua?
Joshua and Caleb, yeah.
They're the two who brought back, gave a good report.
Yep.
Out of the 12 spies.
They were the optimists.
What?
They were the optimists.
They were the optimists. They were the ones who saw the glass half full rather than half empty.
Exactly. They see the whole thing differently, right? The 12 spies or 12... they see the land and 10 bad report. Caleb, Joshua, good report. And what did they say? Let me read for you. In Numbers 14:9, only do not rebel against the Lord and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. For those 10 spies, they see the people so big, like a giant. There's a term called Nephilim, maybe. But they see the whole thing differently. So they do not see the physical difficulties, the difficult environment, but they have a sense of, they kind of seeing the spiritual realm, that God is in control. They see the power of God. So this brings up something, and then go into the next chapter, chapter 27, that when we read, this kind of notion that maybe we need to recall, and then we have this to read chapter 27. So can someone start reading for me? We can all read the whole parasha from verse 1 to verse 14, I think. Anyone can continue?
Then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, from the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. And these were the names of his daughters, Mahla, Noah, Ogla, Milcah, Tirzah. And they stood before Moses, before Eleazar the priest, and before the leaders and all the congregation by the doorway of the tabernacle of the meeting, saying, Our father died in the wilderness, but he was not in the company of those who gathered together against the Lord in company with Korah, but he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. Why should the name of our father be removed from among his family? Because he had no son. Give us a possession among our father's brothers. So Moses brought their case before the Lord. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, The daughters of Zelophehad speak what is right. You shall surely give them a possession of inheritance among their father's brothers, and cause the inheritance of their father to pass to them. And you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, If a man dies and has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass to his daughter. If he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. If he has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And if his father has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to the relative closest to him in his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be to the children of Israel a statute of judgment, just as the Lord commanded Moses. Now the Lord said to Moses, Go up into this Mount Abarim, and see the land which I have given to the children of Israel. And when you have seen it, you also shall be gathered to your people, as Amram your brother was gathered. For in the wilderness of Zin, during the strife of the congregation, you rebelled against my command to hollow me at the waters before their eyes. These are the waters of Meribah at Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So you see that the rebellion mentioned a little bit again here, like Korah and Moses' rebellion against the Lord, and that's why they're not included in the counting. I mean, they're not going to inherit the land, kind of. So, and here we have the story of Zelophehad, and later on in the end of the book of Numbers, chapter 36. They will come up again, the similar story, but that is another thing, and that focus on the other Manasseh people that challenge about if they got married to other tribes, then the land they inherit will go to other tribes. So I'm not going to cover that part, but just focus in this chapter here. So who are they? Who are these five daughters? And who is their father? Well, the word Zelophehad is kind of quite long, right?
In Hebrew, it's Sadi, Lamech, Hei, Het, Dalet. It's like this, okay? So it's one of the interpretations, I guess. It's like we can put divide it into two.
Oh yeah.
Right. It's kind of a south and pahat kind of. So this is one of the interpretation. We have a similar thing in Psalm 23, like when you mentioned go through the valley of the shadow of death. Actually, that is Psalm Mafet. So Psalm is mean shadow, and death is Mafet. But here we have Zelophehad is Sal, shadow, and Pahat. Pahat means the dread and fear. So it's kind of a shadow of fear. We may interpret like that, right? But actually the text didn't tell much about what kind of problem of this man. And
that's amazing. So the girls really did have a fear, because if they were going to lose everything, they really were out on a limb.
Yeah, but it gives us a sense that this is not something good, like kind of. And we know a little bit more is from the daughters of Zenophehar. They mentioned that their father is not died in the rebellion against the Lord, but in his own sin. And that's it. We don't have much more information. But this is good enough that he's not belong to those camps that like Korah, that go against the Lord. So his own sin, the Hebrew is hatah. Hatah is, we usually interpret like missing the mark, missed the mark. Like not doing something the Lord expected. This is not something good, but not as big mistake as rebellion against the Lord. It should be reading like this. And the problem is these five daughters, they have no other siblings and they have no father. So let's imagine a little bit about their situation. If you were those five daughters in the ancient world, in a patriarchal society, just man has the authority to say. So what would be their situation? Keep me like.
Well, even if they do marry, they disappear into the family they marry.
Right.
And then their name is gone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the name is gone. Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. their descendants, they basically have no more descendants for that.
Mm-hmm. Which comes back to what we said before about this whole thing about family.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their family identity.
Mm-hmm.
So they go. They have no land. They have no.
Inheritance.
No. Yeah, but what was the word that Sally used just now? Like a dowry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you marry, you've got to bring something into the marriage,
uh-huh.
and they've got nothing.
Yeah.
You don't know. Well, yeah, could be. I'm not quite sure about that. But here we can see that, like, they have no father and no siblings, no brothers. So they are not in a good situation in an ancient world. Because in ancient world, ladies, women, they need men's protection. Right? And actually, this also reflects in chapter 30, when the women, they make a vow or an oath, when they are still young, before married, then their father can override it, can cancel it out. And if they have got married, then their husband can cancel their oath. So we can see that in the ancient world, in their environment. Like, for me, what I would, if I were there, maybe I would try to get married, to have someone to protect me. That would be the quick, easy solution. And then I can go on with my life and I can do what I want. But in their situation, they do not take this easy path. They try to go to talk to Moses. Well, it is also very hard for us to imagine, I guess, because we can just WhatsApp our pastors or email, you know. But for them, they belong to like a bottom part of the society. They have no father and no siblings, no man to protect them. And their father is not someone famous. Their father is dying in his own sin. So it seems like to them they need a very strong courage, boldness, to come out and to stand in front of the doorway of the tent of meeting to meet someone very high, Moses and Aaron, who do a lot of miracles, you know. So this is uneasy for them. So here, what do they really care, actually? Why they have this kind of courage?
Name of the father.
Sorry?
Name of the father.
Right. Which verse can you say? Mm-hmm.
Why should the name of our father be remembered?
Right. They care about the name of their father. Because through the inheritance, actually, maybe Sharon just mentioned, eventually if they got married, the inheritance will go away through that marriage. But They care about the name of their father. They want to have something that belongs to their fathers. And this just let me think about the Lord's Prayer, like in the beginning. Because in Hebrew, the word there is Shem Avinu. Shem is name, Avinu is our father. And in the Lord's Prayer in the beginning is Avinu Shebashemayim, and hallowed be your name. Your name is so important. It's something like that let me think about. But I think this is something important, that do we really care about the name of our fathers? Yeah, especially our Father of Heaven. So actually we can also do a little bit of comparison between the two tribes. You can see that the five daughters of Sehafila, Zelophehad, he belongs to Manasseh, and his father died and not the leader of a son. But in terms of Shimon, the leader's son called Zimri, he committed adultery. And that actually like making a covenant with another idol. And that caused them a big drop in numbers. But for these five daughters of Zelophehad, they so care about their father's land. They so care about the inheritance of the land. And the inheritance of the land is actually the promised fulfillment to Abraham, right? So this is something that may not be able to inherit right now. We need to do a lot of conquering. After several years, maybe they already died. I don't know, but it takes some time. It is not something they can get it immediately. It is something about their future, their father's name, their father's future. So they are doing something kind of like seeing something not just in front of them, not really physical. A little bit, I mean, related to Caleb and Joshua here. Like. So they are doing spiritually very good, we can think of. Right? And through this, I will think of the prophet that we should read today is Isaiah 57, verse 13. Can anyone read for me?
When you cry out, let your collection of idols deliver you, but the wind will carry them away, and the breath will take them away. But he who takes refuge in me will inherit the land and will possess my holy mountain.
It seems quite obvious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the word inherit appears here again. And the Hebrew is Yinchal Eres. It's come from the same root, I think, like this root.
Can I say something about Nahal?
Yep, sure.
The word that the settlers here use for themselves in Hebrew is Mit Nahalim. They are the ones who inherit the land, the ones who are living in Judea and Samaria. It's very important for us.
I see.
Thank you. And it ties up with everything today.
Yep. And also, and we'll process my holy mountain. The word process is Yarash. These two words are usually used for possessing the inheritance. And most of the time, to refer to the promised land, kind of, they inherit the land from the promise by God. So here we see that verse 13, they cry out to your collections of idols. Actually, the word idol, it is not in the Hebrew, I guess, right? But we can relate this a little bit maybe to the context of Numbers 20, 25, 26, that they go idolatry to worship Baal Peor. They have adultery as well. And then the Lord sent a plague to to wipe them out, to take them away, like here, like a wind and a breath. This, in many situations, it kind of related to God's work, like God to send the wind to spread the Red Sea, you know. So this is something kind of God's work here. But he who takes refuge in me will inherit the land. So we can think of this relation with the daughters of Zenophehar, how they see the future, the importance of the fulfillment of the promise of God given to Abraham, and to process my holy mountain. Holy mountain would refer to Jerusalem here, right? The temple, actually, later on. But I mean, this is a place that represents the notion of God's presence, God's pleasing with his people and want to dwell among them. So we can have all this kind of notion that those who take refuge in God will inherit the land. And actually, I can think of a little bit like in the Sermon of the Mount also, right? Can you recall that?
Yeah. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of the inheritance of the land, well, for them it is quite physical, but actually it also has a kind of a spiritual sense that something is about God's kingdom, is about taking part in God's plan. So,
hey, that's interesting, because meekness, I always think of, you meek a horse, you bring power under control.
Mm-hmm.
That's what meekness is. It's not sloppy, sometimes we think of it. And that's what these girls are. These girls are meek. They're bringing their own authority under the control. They're bringing it to... They're basically speaking out what they really need and what they really want, and they've got this courage to go and speak to Moses. That's what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
that they've got real guts to go and speak to Moses when, you know, they're just girls.
Right. It's, yeah.
And that's meekness, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Actually, in Matthew, it's quoting like Psalm 37, if I'm not mistaken. Like, let me see. Which verse it is? For those who wait for the Lord will inherit the land, maybe verse 9, something like that.
Verse
11 it should be, right, sorry, 11. But the humble will inherit the land. And, in a nutshell, in Psalm 37 is about those bad guys doing things, and the psalmist do not follow them and do not envy about them. They are doing bad things, but they go, they become prosperity, or kind of like how to say it.
They trust in prosperity, or
the evil men, they are prosper in their life. And the Psalm 37 is talking about these people who are humble. They do not like following them. They do not envy about their success, and they use a lot of energy to withhold themselves, to be patient and wait for God's action.
Mm-hmm.
So if these people, they inherit the land. This is the portion, the spiritual portion that God gave to them. So it seems to me it's also kind of like a, if someone who care about God, who care about his kingdom, his plan, then he will try to do something, right?
Does it tie up her? Because the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight himself in the abundance of peace. And this is following on Pinchas, who's given the covenant of peace because he's dealt with the harlotry and the sin.
Yeah.
I mean, I've not seen that before. It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Right.
So you get the peace when you are both meek on the one hand, but at the same time you're again prepared to be strong and deal with the things that really need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I see. So let's think about the impact of these five daughters. because of their request, their boldness, they stand out to ask about this request. My father, he should have the inheritance. And then turn out God tell Moses something, right? It kind of giving a new commandment, new mishpat, new judgment. That we have several verses about that. It's from, let me see, in Numbers 27, from verse 6, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, the daughters of Zelophehad are right in their statements. You shall surely give them an hereditary possession among their father's brothers, and you shall transfer the inheritance of their father to them. And then all along, we have verse 8 to until like 11. It's all about if a man dies, has no son, and then the inheritance is so important that it can transfer to his daughter. And if no daughter, then transfer to his brothers. If no brothers, then go to his father's brothers. You know, there's a long kind of a long list. So it becomes like something very important, very insignificant. So you can see that, like, if these five daughters, if they do not stand out, maybe we don't have these new commandments here. But because of them, they make an impact. And this impact, not just to their own family, but also to their clan, their tribe, the whole Israelite group, that everyone become more care about the inheritance of the land, care about God's.
Can you give us the references again for the putting in the new rules, really?
Actually, it's here, like
27
from verse 8 to 11. Right.
Well, like you were saying, Herbert, these girls symbolize the most vulnerable in the society because they're women and they're orphans.
Right.
Like, how much lower can you go?
And
like
they're single.
And they're
single.
So they are, in fact, the most lowly, the most humiliated in a sense.
Right.
Or humble, how you
look
at it.
Thank you for helping me to do the expression.
No, and so this Isaiah 57, you know, when it says in verse 15, God is saying, I dwell in an exalted and holy place, but also with the discouraged and humiliated, in order to cheer up the humiliated and to encourage the discouraged. Like, God is the ultimate strength, and he is the protector of the most vulnerable.
Right. Verse 15, right?
So, like, they're that symbol. Like, he cares about their inheritance, too.
Mm-hmm.
And gives them value, even though they are the most vulnerable.
True, yeah. Thank you. And so we can see that, like, if someone be so care about God's name, about their father's name, about the inheritance, the spiritual possession of God, they make an impact to their family, their society, right? And actually, maybe we can chew a little bit more in this. I'm not quite sure if this is like a foundation related to the concept of redemption. But I think it's quite similar because when we talk about redeeming someone's possession, actually this is not the first place here, but I mean in Leviticus, it talks about this already. In chapter 25, verse 25, it talks about when your brothers get poor and somehow lost the land, your brothers should help to redeem it back. But I think it's a little bit related here, like you care about the land of someone's name, and then you try to get, try to take it, try to to reserve the land, the name, sorry, to reserve the name. And if we go to like Ruth chapter 4, we can see a similar thing here, like. Because when we talk about redemption, we would think of Ruth, right? Boaz redeemed the land of, and also married Ruth. In Ruth chapter 4, maybe What time? How many time do we have?
Okay, now? Is
okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we go to the beginning of chapter 4, Boaz goes up to the gate, and you know the gate is kind of like a judgment court that they make a legal transaction, and somehow the relative of Ruth, which is a more close relative, and that guy should do the redemption. But when Boaz talked to that guy and see if that guy wanted to inherit the land and also marry the Ruth, that guy reject about that. So Boaz become legally standard and has the right to redeem Ruth. And can someone read for me like chapter 4, verse 9 and 10?
Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "Your witnesses this day that I bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Therefore, Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day."
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So you can also see that actually the caring of someone's name and inheritance, it make a huge impact. And a similar principle like here that when Ruth, his husband, died, and you know all the men that died here also in the story of Ruth. And now preserving the name of the inheritance is so important. So we hear, especially in verse 10, the name of the decreaser is not cut off from the brothers. So this is in a similar principle here in the story of Zelophehad. So we can see that like how much we care about God's name, about Shem Avinu, our father's name, care about his promised possession to us, about his kingdom, his plan. And no matter how inadequate or society status we are now, or we don't have any
status,
right? Thank you. Yeah, we are not in a good status, but if we care about God, care about His name, and we are bold enough to stand out to do something for God, for our Father's name, then you make an impact to the family, to the tribe, and also kind of also go into this redemption idea that you make a huge impact in God's kingdom, I would say. Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that I when I meditate and prepare, I got this. Mm-hmm. So.
And the redemption extends in the story from Ruth. She's a Moabite.
Yeah.
So she's actually acting exactly opposite to what we read in Numbers 25.
Right.
And it mentions also Tamar,
mm-hmm.
who is a Canaanite.
Yeah.
And yet they were redeemed and brought into the people of Israel and given an inheritance with God's people.
Exactly.
Because of the same meekness and boldness before God, but to see his plan and try to align with
yeah.
it. You know, it's very beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah true.
And I suppose the key then is Ruth's words, "Your God is my God."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas the Moabites were after other gods. It's always coming back to...
There's an exact verbal link in Ruth 2:12 where I think it's Boaz says to Ruth, "May your acts of kindness be repaid fully by the Lord God, Israel, for whom you have sought refuge and protection."
Mm. Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In Isaiah 53:7-13, where it says, "But the one who looks to me for help will save me."
One who takes refuge in me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
So it's that
yeah.
idea. She's like the daughters of.
So hard.
Right.
It's just the word link you're talking about.
Lachasot.
Hey.
sort to take refuge.
In Ruth 2:12
and in Isaiah 57.
Just take refuge under the wings.
Yeah.
So that's like to cover.
Right. The kanaf,
we're basically talking about refugees. People who need to take shelter, so you can find it in God, or you can find it in your idols or your power or whatever it is you have.
So should we end here? Do we need to pray or whatever? I can't remember. Okay. So let's do a prayer when we finish here. Okay. Dear Lord, we thank you for this morning that we can gather together. Although we are from different places, different countries, but we see that your word is sweet. It's like honey that it gives us another kind of angle to look into your kingdom. When we are, no matter in what situation we are, maybe we are poor, we are under persecuted, we are not having a good status in the society, but if we care about you, care about your name, your kingdom, your inheritance, then we can make an impact, and you can use us just like the daughters of Zelophehad that bring benefits to the whole family, the tribes, the clans, and also even your redemption plan. So Lord, we thank you, and thank you for your encouragement, and please bless our day that we're going to into a Sunday service, and may your presence continue to be with us. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen.
Amen.